Corey Good was identified as an intuitive empath with precognitive abilities and was recruited through one of the MyLab programs at the young age of 6. Good trained and served in the MyLab program from 1976, 1986, 1987. Towards the end of his time as a MyLab, he was assigned to an IE support role for a rotating Earth delegate seat shared by secret Earth government groups, by the way, in a human-type ET Super Federation Council. During his 20-year service, his assignments included the Intruder Intercept Interrogation Program, an assignment to the ASSR-ISRV Auxiliary Specialized Space Research Interstellar Class Vehicle. Good is in, today, direct physical contact with the Blue Avians of the Sphere Being Alliance, who have chosen him as a delegate to interface with multiple ET federations and councils on their behalf, liaison with the SSP Alliance Council, and to deliver important messages to all of humanity. His website is thespherebeingalliance.com. I would like to welcome back to Fade to Black our friend Corey Good. Corey, good evening.
Good evening to you.
How are you, man? Everything good in your world? How was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was very good. Yeah, I had some good time with family.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, man. You just look around and be thankful, right? That's it. That's the day. And if you get out of it without a really good fight with your sister, it's all good. Well, maybe you need the good fight with your sister, too, to make it a complete Thanksgiving. That's always the way I kind of look at it. Well, tonight, Corey, I want to break things down in 3 or 4 sections. First, the history of the start of the SSP. Second, what went on in the 1980s and the expansion of the SSP. Third, you and your first contact with it. And then fourth, what is going on today? Who was involved? What is your latest contact or news that you want to have us hear? And of course, the rest of the world. And so that's kind of the structure today. But first, after announcing the show this week, I have gotten a ton of email about Stephen Greer and that we should have. The email was very consistent, Corey. It was that we should have Stephen on the show tonight. You guys need to discuss things and talk things through, whatever. And I did reach out to Stephen today. Okay, I did, but he didn't reply. I have watched the recent video that was posted concerning not only you, but he went off on Tom DeLong as well. And so I kind of want to start off the show with this and give you a chance to reply to what is going on out there, if you have anything to say at all in response to his comments about you.
Well, I mean, I do respect the work that he's done. In his disclosure project that he did in 2001, he brought this topic, you know, to the forefront. We just have a extremely polarizing different view of what is going on out there. And, he feels that, it's irresponsible for anyone to talk about negative extraterrestrials. So, from my point of view, I experience the good with the bad. So I have to go off of my experiences.
Right, right. I'm going to let things go right there. I'm going to let those rest where they are. I'll give him a chance to respond back. The one thing, and I agree with you, the awareness that he started back then has brought things up to another level. There's no question about that. And with my own experiences out there with my sightings and a couple of very strange CE5 kind of moments, one of which you were there too as well. I mean, we saw these things together, that there is something going on out there. And I thank him for that. But there's an open-mindedness that is closed when it comes to Greer that I'm not completely comfortable with. And we'll tackle that on another day. But thank you for handling the question. I think that the way that he said the things that he did in the video was a little bit too strong. And I think that it may have been, in response because he was in front of an audience. I don't think that he would maybe share that privately. I don't know. I don't want to speak for him, but I thought that it was a bit strong. And
we can expand on this on the topic later on. Yes. If he wants to respond, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go, man. I'm excited. Now that this very strange year has gotten behind you, only strange in that you're out in the public now. That's what I mean by that. Started back at the Conscious Life Expo. You came on Fade to Black that night, and you were a little bit, you have thousands of people that are following you around, right? And so you went from that, and then you did your presentation later on that night with David Wilcock. And then this year has unfolded in front of you. You've gone out and you've done some presentations. You've done a lot of Gaia stuff. You've done a lot of public speaking and videos. And so here we are today. And I think that your feet are beneath you now. Okay. That's my opinion. I think you're a little bit more comfortable. So what I wanted to do tonight was really go deep. All right. And try to ask the questions that I've never asked of you before. And in doing that, for the audience that is here for the first time, I know this is a long intro to the show, but it needs to be said that there are people here tonight that have heard you speak before, and they're here for something new. So for them, we have that. For the others that have never heard you speak before, they're here, they've heard about you, they're here for the first time, we do need to address those folks as well, too, and get those questions answered. So I want to do a kind of a linear, chronological presentation, and then we will conclude at the end of the night with a bunch of questions that have been sent in to us. All right, you ready to go?
Let's go.
How long, I'm going to start right here, how long has the official version of the SSP, the Secret Space Program, been around?
The official version, okay. Well, there are a number of programs that are considered secret space programs. Some of them date as far back as the Germans during the 1930s and 40s. Later on, we started to make deals with different shadow groups and started to get our hands on some of this hand-me-down technology, and we started to and also crash retrievals, and we started to engineer our own secret space program, and we started to really work on that in the late 50s and through the 60s, the Americans, that is.
Now, the information that you are going to be giving us from here on out after that answer, is this information that you were given, like, you know, from the glass pad or from somebody off world, or is this stuff that you have read over time?
Well, the structure of the secret space program, I had to kind of experience it over time to understand it. No one really sat down. Everything was so compartmentalized. No one sat down and said, you know, this group, it has this mandate, you know, et cetera. Now, there was a lot of information that I was given. There was a lot of downtime, and I was allowed to browse through these smart glass pads quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did gain a lot of my information from those smart glass pads.
Was there information like when did the Nazis first start traveling into space?
Well, they first started developing their technology to where they could do, I guess, exploratory visits back in the 30s.
And was like that piece of information right there, was that glass pad information? Were you able to access Nazi information through that research?
Yes, this was mainly glass pad information. And every once in a while, if I was in a lab that we had set up and we would call the scientist eggheads, or we were working with engineers, sometimes we would kick back and be looking at the information and discuss it a little bit.
Oh, you know what? For the audience out there that doesn't know what we're talking about, what is the glass pad?
The smart glass pad was this it looked like a piece of just plexiglass when it wasn't activated. And when you would put it on the tips of all five of your fingers and activate it consciously with your consciousness, and the see-through plastic would go opaque on you, and then you would start to see either letters in whatever your root language is, or video. You could see video images that would be shown to you that would be like kind of turning around and looking like they were three-dimensionally coming off of the page.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and it would display a lot of information in a summary type way, and then below there were always footnotes you could go into for the more scientific stuff.
I'm so jealous. That's exactly what I like to do, and especially with this kind of information. Well, okay, so the Nazis started in the 1930s, and was this a deal with the Draco at that time, or did the Vril actually kick this off?
Well, they had made some of the strides on their own. Some of their scientists had made some pretty good connections in electrogravitic propulsion. So they were already, you know, on their way, but they were having a combination of telepathic assistance to where they had contact with them, and also telepathic manipulation, you know, guiding them and manipulating them remotely throughout their space program process.
Did they have a deal with the Draco? You know what I mean? Was there...
Eventually they did. For a while, they were searching all through areas like Tibet, looking for ancient manuscripts that had actual technical schematics in them that they were also using to try to build these new wonder weapons.
And with the ability to travel to space, did they at that time have the ability to go to the moon, or were they just...
Yes, they made expeditions to the moon and to Mars, and to a local attempt to a local star system that didn't go too well. None of these really went too well for them in the beginning. They were having crashes and failures and losing people.
And how much of this did Hitler know about? And I'm asking because the societies and the research that was going on, and with the Draco, was this something that was kept away from Hitler?
It appears that he knew quite a bit, but there was a lot that some of his henchmen started to take control of, and they started running it, a lot of it beyond what he was privy to.
Because
he definitely, you know, he knew all about the bases in Antarctica and South America in these cavern systems that they were building.
Right.
He was very aware of that. Some of these were joint bases, and we were told where we could build bases by the Draco.
Was there a reason?
The Germans.
Yeah. Right. Was there a reason? Because if he would have had, to me, a direct knowledge of the ability to, you know, have flying saucers over Washington, D.C. with offensive weapons, it would have played out that way. But it didn't. And was that because of the Draco? Was there a reason why? Or did he not know about it?
No, he knew about the weapons. They were the weaponizing the discs was a little bit more difficult than they expected. They, using kinetic weapons, didn't... you know, they could fire a good shot off, but then they had issues with it restabilizing. So they needed directed energy weapons, and that was something that they had under development as well at the time when the Axis, I guess, fell.
Oh, I get you. So, like, putting a cannon, right? When you say kinetic, like putting a cannon or something right. big on one of these ships, and it fired... it would become unstable.
Right.
Ah, I got you. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, when did they end up, the Nazis, building the moon base? I don't want to get to Mars just yet. When did they build that moon base, and how big was it?
They built it in stages. It was not as large as it has been depicted in certain movies. The part that was above ground were a little bit larger than, I guess you would say, like shipping containers that go on these barges.
Okay.
And they were connected together and did form somewhat a swastika.
So it was really shaped like a swastika.
Yes, but in the beginning, what they were doing is they were traveling in these larger disc craft they had and were scouting out places to build. They were finding out how unfriendly different parts of the moon can be if you don't have permission to be there. So they were making all these types of discoveries and mistakes. And in the beginning, they found some ancient buildings that they actually ended up pressurizing and using for a short period of time while they were building their bases.
So it was basically a swastika built out of shipping containers. Am I picturing this correctly?
Similar, yeah.
Right, right, right. Okay, I got you. And then when did they make it to Mars? And are we dealing with, like, is this 1940, you know, 1941? Was this during World War II?
Yes, this was through late, I believe, late, like, 39 through the early 40s that they were really striking out and starting to do these expeditions. And I can't remember the name of the star. They tried to make a trip to a certain star system and ended up, I believe, losing their crew.
Interesting. With the Mars base, you describe, I think this occurred on the moon too as well. You describe them taking the local dirt, right? The local soil, putting that in,
yeah,
in bags, right? Like sandbags, building up walls, and then spraying stuff over it. And that's how they got it done.
Yeah, the small little base type things they would build on the surface were done this way. Most of it was built underground, but if you had to have a security outpost with, you know, 30, 60 operators, then they would have these huge, it's like 6 foot long sandbags filled with the local Martian dirt.
Right.
And build up the walls, and then they would come through and spray them down with this stuff that's kind of like the truck bed lining.
Right.
And then they would do this on the inside and the outside, and on the inside they would start to build it out, you know, with walls and, you know, pipes, you know, like you would have an RV almost.
Yeah.
And it's just, electrical systems.
It seems like Elon Musk has got it all wrong, doesn't he? Right. It only makes sense if you think about it. It's a very, very interesting way to look at it. And then,
well, Elon Musk, you know, that's something they'll live in tin cans for a little while, but after that, they'll learn how to mold things out of the ground. They'll probably start bringing strange things there, like bamboo, to try to grow and start to use that material in building. You know, there's a lot to that. Can be done and has already been experimented with.
Yeah, totally. And what do you think he knows about Mars? Obviously, he thinks he knows a lot. But, you know, wherever he starts to build, is it going to be away from existing stuff that is there? I mean, to keep him compartmentalized?
I would be shocked if he was not, if he did not have to submit for pre-approval areas that he would like to set up these little colonies.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm very excited about the privatization of space. You know what I mean? Keeping the players out of it, and we'll just see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's been heavily interfered with so far.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, and then following World War II, we have Operation High Jump. And what was discovered and what actually happened in High Jump?
Well, they had a lot of intel, and a lot of it was very hard to believe. Part of the intel having to do with, William Tompkins has come forward recently with his book and his information that, you know, has me convinced that a lot of the information I was looking at on the smart glass pad came from briefings that he sat through back in the 40s.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's uncanny.
And the discovery down there, because we have the Draco, and did the Draco show the Nazis their base in Antarctica? How did that play out? The Draco were there first, obviously.
The Draco ended up bringing the Nazis down to Antarctica at the time and showed them an area of underground caverns that they could easily, with their current technology and fabrication abilities, build out a pretty extensive base system.
Do you know how these caverns were formed?
Well, a lot of them were formed with just from volcanism and the plate tectonics. Some of these are giant rift systems from plates that have pulled apart and filled with water, or some of them have not filled with water. A lot of them are, you know, lava tube systems that, you know, go deep under the earth. And, you know, the earth is more of a honeycomb than people realize. We have caverns and tunnel systems, some of them that never connected naturally, but were opened up by ancient beings that we have no idea who they were.
How big are they? What did you see when you were there under the ice?
Well, when I was under the ice, I saw the above ground. It looked like if you were to fly over a area where I guess a lot of ships come in. It was like a shipping yard, this largest area, and there were these huge electromagnetically propelled submarines that had these shells opened on them, and these cranes had rolled out on this train track and were unloading them. And, you know, they were huge. And I saw, after we went down below the surface of the water and the craft I was in, we did then get to see these submarines traveling underwater and traveling through this rift system that travels all the way from the northwest corner of Antarctica through South America, up through Central America, and up through the west coast of the United States.
Whoa, excuse me. I just coughed live on the air. Hold on. Oh, wow. I need a hit of this coffee. Very strange. It just came out of nowhere, too, as I started to speak. Why did the Dracos take the Nazis down there? Didn't they see the bad side to the Nazis? And why did they have that kind of alliance?
Well, they basically had the same type of ideology and goals. They had world conquest on their agenda, and they were both groups, the Draco and the Nazis, are very occult. So they were, you know, they were very similar.
And was it because there were certain elements of, certainly with the Vril, maybe, that there were good Germans that they were okay with? You know, did they understand the German, the Nazi agenda from World War II? And do you think the Dracos would have backed off if they knew?
Well, the Draco were already negative, so they didn't care if the Nazis were positive or negative. There were other non-terrestrials that we were, as humans, we were beginning to interface with, and this included some of these Nordic-looking groups, and they were also making contact with the Nazis, but they were making contact with a little bit more positively oriented Germans as well, such as, you know, like the Maria Orsic and her group.
Right, right. Now, we're going to head towards a break here in 60 seconds. So I want to ask this question, because when we come back, we're going to deal with Paperclip and then jump into current events. Did the Draco control the Germans, or was it the other way around? Did the Germans control the Draco?
Basically, it was an alliance. They were working together. The goal was to eventually produce a whole lot of, spaceships that they could use to go out and conquer other star systems along the Draco with. So this was it looked like a partnership on the surface, but the Draco most likely had something in the vice.
Right, right. So it wasn't exactly a mutually beneficial relationship, in other words.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, let's take a break right here. When we come back, we're going to get to Paperclip. We've got to go to Paperclip because that is the next stage in the development of the SSP. This is Fade to Black. Before the break, as we started to get into the German scientists and the Draco and what was going on with the technology, we need to get into Paperclip. Now, everybody knows about Paperclip and that program, bringing over the German scientists for our rocket program and research over here. But at that time, did the German scientists that were here with Paperclip, did they introduce us to the Draco and their technology, or did the United States already have some type of knowledge about what was the Draco and what they were here doing?
Yeah, the United States already had a good idea about, you know, three or four different species on the planet when it came around the time of Paperclip. What the United States really didn't understand was how dedicated these Paperclip scientists still were, or many of them still were, to the Nazi Party, which had now relocated down to Argentina and Antarctica.
Right.
So these people were in contact through spies that were in place already from World War II, in contact through their spy network with their superiors in Antarctica and Argentina. And so they were getting orders, and they were passing information back and forth. They were interfering in technological developments of the United States when needed. They would cause experiments not to work outright or technology to fail. So they were working against us in the beginning. But all of that changed in the early 50s, around 1952, when after, I guess, High Jump, and we had gone down there and realized that we could not handle them technologically or militarily any longer. We then had the Nazis fly over Washington, D.C., to basically use that as brinksmanship to force the Americans to come to the table and negotiate with them.
Did the Draco share weapon technology? Obviously, they shared the anti-gravity and flying saucer spaceship technology and off-world technology, but what about weapons?
Yes, they shared weapons technology with the Germans, but you have to understand that handing this information over to the Germans, it always has to go through this research and development phase to where they have to take the technology that's beyond their understanding, find a way to marry their technology to that technology, and then produce a result consistently that they would like, and then bring it to a point to where they can manufacture it and put it in the field.
So World War II ended, and they didn't have a chance to develop the technology that they were exposed to.
Right.
It would have been a different story. With your guess, with your research and what you have been able to find out, how close were they to really causing a lot of trouble?
They were very close. They were already able, with the help of some of the non-terrestrial groups down in Antarctica, to repel, you know, a battle group that was coming down to basically invade Antarctica. So they were very close.
Yeah. And what other countries know about the Draco or have contact with them? At this time, was it just the United States and Germany, or were there other countries too?
There people had known about the Draco under different names for a long time through their occult practices. A lot of these Germans were doing these ancient German occult practices that were causing these beings to manifest. And these beings happened to be, you know, reptilians.
Now,
they were accessing them through basically magic and ritual for some time before they made the technological leap that were technologically based and not just spiritually based.
And throughout this period, I have three questions and then we're going to move on. Did the United States know about the bases on the moon and Mars? Second, were the Nordics involved, or was it just the Draco at this time? And third, were the Nordics involved in the negotiations of the alliances that were going down with the Draco and the rest of the world?
Okay, let's take those one at a time.
Yeah, right.
So, do the first one, what was that?
The first one was, were the Nordics aware and around about the relationship between the Draco and the rest of the world?
Yes, the Nordics tried to warn the United States about making deals with this Draco group, but of course the humans didn't listen. They were wanting the Nordics to provide us with a lot of offensive weaponry that they weren't willing to provide us with because we weren't spiritually in equilibrium with our technological state already.
Right.
So, you know, they knew what was going on. They were interacting with us at the same time. And a lot of people, when they think about the Draco or these different groups, they try to put it into these little time chunks that this group was in contact with us, and then this group later got in contact with us. The fact is that we had multiple groups in contact with us at the same time.
And did we have, along with all of this conversation that was going on and the knowledge that was being shared, did the United States know about the moon base and what was going on Mars?
Well, they had intelligence about the, I guess, fledgling base system that had developed, but they were not getting until like the late 50s when we really started. The United States started working with the breakaway Nazi group from South America.
Right.
We really didn't have all of that intelligence yet.
So, which says to me, and I need your confirmation on this, that the paperclip group was holding back, and we thought that we had something good going on there, but they certainly knew about what was going on the moon and Mars, but didn't tell us about it.
Right. They were part of a plan all along. The Nazis had this technology that they would like to develop, and they wanted to co-opt the United States and the industrial might that had beat them. We were producing 5-10 tanks for every one they were.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to use this, our infrastructure, to build out a wider infrastructure in outer space. And to do so, they had to infiltrate us. And when we were making deals with these Nazi breakaway groups, we had planned all along to infiltrate them and take them over, but they were already several steps ahead of us in that process.
Was there a reason why von Braun didn't allegedly, I should say, put us on the moon until 1969, when obviously there was already a moon base there? Was there a deliberate attempt to sabotage the public version of the space program?
Well, yeah, and all of this was compartmentalized. You know, who knows what von Braun knew about, you know, the space program that we were developing. You know, we were already going to the moon, you know, before the time of Apollo.
Right.
So, you know, all of this is so compartmentalized. As I've stated, some of these military industrial complex space programs that are made up of like the NSA, DIA, Air Force Intelligence, that have a couple of space stations about 400 or 500 miles in orbit of the Earth. And they have a number of these exotic craft, like these triangular craft, that service them. So, you know, and a lot of these people, they've been giving briefings. They've been given briefings, and they don't know anything about any bases on the moon or Mars. And they've been told that they're the top of the totem pole security-wise. And they just will not accept anything you have to say that does not fit into their, you know, programmed reality.
Were the Draco freely leaving Earth at that time too as well? Were they coming and going?
At what time? At what time?
In the 50s.
Yes. Yeah. They were coming and going from Earth and our solar system freely.
Gotcha. Okay. Now let's jump forward a little bit in the timeline, and let's go to the brain drain. What was the brain drain?
Well, once the Nazis had infiltrated the West sufficiently to where they were able to start actually building, out this infrastructure, they needed the people to do it. And they wanted the best minds, the best engineers, the best that they could get to do this. So they had approached these people, told them that an asteroid or something was on its way to hit the Earth, that they were the best of the best. They were special, and they were chosen as a continuity of species project to take humans to Mars, let's say, and set up colonies there and industrial sites there to make it more likely that our species would survive.
And when the brain drain was active, did the participants that volunteered, once they were told, did they have a chance to back out, or was that it? You were kidnapped virtually, right? And almost enslaved is the word I want to use.
Yeah, once you were in, you were in. And they did deceive a lot of these people. They showed them brochures that were actually images of some of our deep military bases that are for the elite to keep them safe here on Earth. And they were told that this is on Mars, and they, see these great big glass elevators going up, real futuristic looking. And they're told, this is like the Jetsons. You're going to live like the Jetsons. And, they take their family with them. They arrive on Mars, and they get a very quick reality check, and they find out that indeed they and their families are now slaves.
How many were involved? And a large chunk also came from South America too, right?
Yeah, South America, the United States, Europe, they pulled them out of Asia. They pulled them everywhere.
And what's your best knowledge of how many families, how many people were involved?
The number of people has gone into the millions over decades. This is something that was ongoing. There was a real big drive in the beginning, to get, we need 50,000 people immediately. And then after that, they just needed to sustain the numbers along, with bringing fresh people in. But they also were sustaining the numbers because the people were procreating on these bases.
Right. And it indeed was a one-way ticket.
Yes.
You didn't come back.
No.
Okay. Now, and with that, as sensational as that sounds, we could probably go back and look at numbers and find a lot of missing people, right? And there's that part of it. But the other part is, how can you keep something like this so secret? And how come we don't know about it? Or how come we can't account for it? How do you keep a project like this that is so large with 50 million people missing and enslaved? How do they keep this secret?
Well, if the people don't come back, they can't tell their secrets. But they would, and I think David Wilcock has kind of talked about this in the past. They would have people fill out a bunch of postcards, tell their family they're taking a job at an exotic location. And, the postcards get fewer and fewer until they don't hear from them anymore. And people move on with their lives.
And that's it. Forgotten.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to 1980. Solar Warden was formed. Take us there. What happened in 1980?
Yeah, Solar Warden was formed. They were building the first vessels, which were very large, glorified submarines, basically, that had electromagnetic torsion drives, had their power plants in the beginning were just your run-of-the-mill nuclear power plants. Then later on, they moved to these thorium-type reactors. And then much later, closer to the late 90s, around that time, they moved to this zero-point energy module that they had that took up very little space in the module that was that once kept or held these very large reactors.
These ships were obviously huge. Where did they build them?
I was told that they built them in Utah, and they were built in, they were modular. They were built in pieces. The outer hull was built in, the one I was in was in two pieces. And then the inside, they could build modules that would slide in and out of the inside hull, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you have described them like submarines, and you asked me to go look at a video, which I did, and you said if you can understand this, then you can understand basically what the ships were like, except for they were, you know, much larger. And yeah. You made another comment that I found really, really interesting. You said that the guys that built these ships, well, I think they built one. They built one originally?
Yeah, well, they built a group. They built carriers. They had these smaller craft that were to service these ships out right. in space.
Right.
But this, in particular, yes, these are these larger cigar-shaped vessels that I was just describing.
And the crews that built the ships lived on the ships as they built them.
Different, like the engineering group mainly lived on board the craft as they were finishing building it so they could learn the systems in and out.
And how did they leave the Earth? Because we're going to get to the LOC now. I mean, that's the next stage in this timeline. How did they leave Earth without being seen?
Sometimes they are seen.
Right.
Yes, but they take off at a given time when they're supposedly going to be less likely to be seen. They lift off from the surface of the Earth, go into outer orbit, get in contact with the Lunar Operation Command, which is basically, you know, flight control for the area around here, and then they're told where they are assigned.
Right. And did the Russians or the Chinese or even the Australians who had, you know, pretty extensive radar and the British, were they able to track, did they know that these crafts were going between the moon and Earth at that time?
They became aware as their space programs started to develop. The Russians started to develop these spherical type craft that were fairly maneuverable and reliable. They started working closer with the United States, even during the time of the Cold War. So a lot of the Cold War stuff was, I guess, theater.
Yeah, we're going to get to Ronald Reagan here in just a bit. But what I want to address is the original German base was turned into the LOC. Why? Why not build something new?
Well, to get real estate up on the moon, to have any real estate that you're able to build on is a very positive thing. The moon is kind of split up between different non-terrestrials into these I guess, zones, kind of like they've separated Antarctica into different zones that the United States controls, that Russia controls, you know. And the moon is kind of that way, too. And it's the groups are very segmented from each other, and they do not allow trespassers.
So the original German base was in a That's okay. The original German base was in a zone that we had access to, is what you're saying.
Yeah, sorry. I had water down the wrong pipe there. Yeah, the Germans were given an area that they could build on by the Draco, on the Draco's claim.
Well, I want to jump ahead, but I'm not going to. Let's stay right here. In 1986... there was the 20 and back program that involved you.
Right.
And so the LOC was already in place, right? And which was around 1980, 81, 82. That got developed. 86 was the 20 and back program. What was that?
Yeah, the 20 and back program was a program that they normally, it was an offer that was normally made to military personnel. But, they needed, I guess, civilian specialists as well. And it's a program to where you would sign off on going out into space for 20 years and at the end of that 20 years be brought back to Earth after first being blank slated or having your mind messed with to where you have no memories of it.
Right.
And then they – and this is where you lose people. They – age regress you through some pharmaceutical type of method, and then they stitch you back in the time frame that they took you out to begin with.
Yeah, and why not? This is the question you probably get most often, so I'll just address it right now. Why not just leave you at the same age? What was the necessity for the regression?
There was some sort of deal in place that if they were to pull assets in this manner, that these assets had to be when they were done using them, these assets being people like myself had to be returned to the point in time and mentally and age wise that they were when they were taken. Why this was done, I don't know, but I think it has to do with a technology exchange between the Nordic groups and some of these syndicate groups that ended up forming these secret space programs.
And how many people were involved at that time that you knew of in the 20 and back program, and were they all regressed?
Well, yes, everyone was regressed, even the military people. They had people that were obviously, you know, military in the space program, and they had been pulled out to do this 20 and back program while they were serving in the regular military. So they were kind of recruited out of the regular military. When they're done, they're going to be returned back to the same time period that they were taken as well, and also have their memories wiped.
Now, was it at this point that you were exposed to the Germans and the Dark Fleet?
Yeah, that was throughout the time in the space program. You would see these people. There'd be people in different uniforms, different energies about them, and you would just assume they're all a part of your program, and you just don't know anything about them. But as time progressed, you would hear people talking about, oh, that group, they didn't like their attitude, and you started hearing. And gaining information about the other groups over time like that.
And so what was the Dark Fleet?
Yeah, it was a group of very, they look like Nazis, Nazi-type people that we, for a long period, we had no idea what they were doing in Solar Warden. But they obviously had, they had craft that were more offensive than the ones that we were flying, and they were very secretive and had an air about them like they were more important or knew something we didn't. And eventually we found out that they are out flying alongside the Draco in controlling territories and conquest as well.
Why? What was it used for when you say it like that? It sounds almost offensive. Was it offensive and defensive?
The Dark Fleet?
Yes.
It was. That was purely an offensive force. They were armed to the teeth, and they were flying outside of our solar system almost exclusively alongside Draco.
And so they continued to develop that technology that they were exposed to and those weapons in World War II, and now we're in the mid-80s, and they are armed to the teeth, and they have a completely offensive fleet for war.
Yeah, and at a certain point, when we developed a certain understanding of these anti-gravity and scalar technologies, our engineers started building the stuff like crazy in our military-industrial complex, and we started building it very well. And we caught up very quickly in being able to fabricate a lot of what was given to us.
And so we had the LOC. The LOC was us, right? And that was ours. But
yes,
the Germans and the Draco had a joint base up there that was off limits. What do you know about that?
Very little. What I found out is that they're doing a lot of genetic type of testing. There's a large part of it are laboratories. And they also have part of the area that deals in this human slave trade that is going on.
I don't want to jump into the slave trade just yet, because there is also the ICC that comes into play here, the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate, that is there. They're involved in trade, and part of that is this interstellar slave trade. But first, what is the ICC, and is it just a money machine?
Basically, it's a conglomeration. The Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate is basically who heads it. It's a super board, like a board you would have in a company.
Right.
And a lot of these companies, like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, you'll have someone that's on the board, he's been on the board for 20 years, is getting ready to retire. If they have the right stuff, I guess, they'll be offered, you know, listen, why don't you go ahead and retire and then come to work for us on this super board, to where, you know, you'll have a lot more access to these technologies that you've been developing.
They will
go on this super board, where there'll be a member from all these different military-industrial complex.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You heard the music. All right.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to take a break right here. I was going to let you finish. When we come back, we're going to jump into that interstellar slave trade. Our guest tonight, Corey Good.